You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Good morning to you. Doug Gottlieb, Jason McIntyre, in for Dan and the Danettes. It's the Dan Patrick Show, live on Fox Sports Radio. Reminder, there's still time to save on a Traeger wood-fired grill during Father's Day sale. Go to Traeger.com/DP Show and score a free ultimate grill bundle worth $150 with the purchase of select grills. Or save $100 on select grills at your local dealer. Like, that is just such a layup, right? If you got a dad or a brother, you know, or you're somebody's wife or significant other, like, buying a Traeger grill is a no-brainer. So too, Jason, is the NBA this time of year and injuries this time of year. We can get into LeBron a couple days ago and what he said about basically blaming COVID on this rash of injuries to all-stars. But you got the Brooklyn Nets last night, still banged up. James Harden, I don't know what percentage of real James Harden we had, but it's not 100% James Harden. Kevin Durant, a good effort, but not the Herculean effort he was able to put together in Game 5. And the Bucks are able to draw the series equal, right? Is there, can you come away with any big takeaway after you watch Game 6?
Doug, of course you can. First of all, happy early Father's Day weekend to you, Doug. Shout out to my father for an early Father's Day weekend. I do not feel great, though, about Mike Budenholzer and Doc Rivers heading into Father's Day weekend. This could be a tough one for him. I will say, Doug, I said after Game 5, you know, like you said, a Herculean effort from Kevin Durant led them to the win. But look at the last two games, Doug, okay? The Bucks have basically outplayed the Nets in 5 of the 8 quarters. One was a standstill. Other than Kevin Durant going postal in like the final 16 minutes of Game 5, the Bucks have been the better team. And I know they have the worst coach. I know they have the worst superstar. I know they're on the road. But I think I'm going to talk myself into the Milwaukee Bucks, who were favored by Vegas heading into Game 7. I think I may take the Bucks, and which is, you know, obviously a hold-your-nose play on Father's Day weekend.
Okay. Well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen as far as who plays. And this does get into tonight's game a little bit, right? And we're like, when Kawhi went down with a knee injury, which, though it hasn't officially been announced as a torn ACL out for the year, that all signs point to that. When Kawhi went down, I said on my show, and by the way, you can check out Jason's Straight Fire podcast, which he drops in a daily, and then you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, which is daily on Fox Sports Radio, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. When an injury initially happened, I said, like, look at Brooklyn, or obviously look at the Clippers and what they were able to do going back to their last game in Game 5, which is that first game when the team is down a guy or down two guys, and the favorite team won, there's just expectations that they're going to win, right? There's just it's impossible not to think when Kawhi Leonard went down, this series is over. It's impossible not to think that when Kyrie Irving and James Harden are both out, you're like, this series is over. But you got to keep in mind that, one, the expectations, I think, weigh heavy. Two, you got to, as we've seen with Ty Lue, like, you got to adjust to things that change and lineups and matchups that change, right? And the Nets and the Clippers have both played without some of their stars previously in both of the past couple of seasons. Right? So they've had to adjust to how they play, but your whole game plan to how you guard them in the rotations is different. So that first game, you kind of get an initial bump. It's almost like, you know, post debate bumps, or when you add your vice presidential candidate, you get a little bump, and that's really what happened. And now we kind of settle back down into the reality, which is, and I think we'll settle down into that tonight with the Clippers and the Jazz, which is like, look, the Clippers just aren't as good, and you can adjust to the adjustment. And the same thing with the Nets. I wouldn't call it just yet, because I don't know for sure Kyrie's not going to play. And I do think that James Harden did move better in game six than he did in Game 5.
Yeah.
And if he can move better in Game 7 than he did in Game 6, which is far better than Game 5, again, it becomes a different series and a different look. Yeah. But the end story is like, this is kind of how the NBA playoffs have always been.
Oh, kind of
how it's always been. It's always been the team that's not only the best, but the team that's the healthiest has a tendency to win.
Well, the only problem
that's
with
what
that,
happens.
The only problem with that is the numbers say otherwise, that this has been the first season where there have been 8 All-Stars who have missed a playoff game. That's an NBA record. There have been more stars missing games this playoffs, and that doesn't include Chris Paul, who due to COVID may miss the first, I don't know, 2 or 3 games of the Western Conference Finals. Again, there's a lot to be determined there, but you know, this Jazz team had the Clippers. They had them choked out, okay, after the first 2 games. And you got Donovan Mitchell now is hurt. He's not driving. He's settling for bad 3-pointers. Mike Conley, who has a hamstring injury from hell and can't play. He apparently had a setback to his setback. And Mike Conley now, it doesn't sound like he's going to play tonight. I have no faith in the Jazz, but I'm going to say this. Doug, people have been killing me for the last few weeks about my Ty Lue takes. All I have said is, man, we don't know if Ty Lue's a good coach. He comes in, has
he's
LeBron, and wins a title. Okay?
He's an
and now, then he gets fired the next season, like a week or two into the season. We get it. You know, they were rebuilding. And now he's filling in with the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard. So when you've had 2 of the, I don't know, 5 best players of the last decade in LeBron and Kawhi, how can we accurately judge Ty Lue? He doesn't play Terrence Mann the first 2 games of this series. They lose. Oh, wait, maybe I should play Terrence Mann. Oh, yeah, Terrence Mann's kind of a difference maker off the bench. He gives him massive energy, and now they're winning games. So, like, you know, we got former Ty Lue guys coming after me, and I know a guy on the Clipper staff, Dante Jones. We go way back from FS1. And yes, the Clippers have done good things. But, Doug, every single time in the last 2 playoffs that you want to trust the Clippers, what do? They choke. They gag it up. And I have zero faith in them closing out the series tonight. Although, on paper, they should win it. You know, Utah's backcourt is just so injured. Rudy Gobert is such a non-factor in the series. I mean, Doug, you do a lot of coaching. You know that when they identify wherever Rudy Gobert is, they're going right at him. The Stifle Tower can keep him out of the lane, but man, you put him in that pick and roll, and they're eating him alive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all they've decided to go. They've decided to go small, right? They even played Rondo and Patrick Beverley together. It wasn't very good, but they did play them together. I mean, look, if you watch the playoffs and you don't think Ty Lue's done an excellent job, I can't really help you.
But Doug, hold on.
I can't really
an excellent
help you.
Job. Every time he goes on the court, he's got maybe the 2 best players. Okay? You know, I know Luka was amazing in the first round. I think Luka's probably the best player in the league, but he's also got Kawhi, Paul George. Morris is better than the number 2 on Dallas. I mean, the Utah team is good. You know, I know they won 50 games,
but let's be realistic.
Marcus Morris
is better than that. There's a reason Marcus Morris has bounced around the league.
Bro, Marcus Morris has 49 points in the last 2 games.
Yes, why is
that? 8 of 10 on threes.
Why is that?
Well, he's a pretty decent player. He got
a
lot of
money.
Why
is that? Let's go back to why is that.
Jason
McIntyre, Doug Gottlieb, in for Dan the Danettes here on Fox Sports Radio. Because they've decided to go small, so Marcus Morris matches up with Rudy Gobert and allows Marcus Morris to stand outside and shoot threes. It's a matchup thing. And because the Jazz haven't made them pay going to any screen roll and throw it to the rim, okay? And because Gobert can't really score at the block, they've been able, you know, to stretch out the defense, right? Like it's one of those.
Right, but this isn't rocket science. Like they started Zubac, the big guy, against Mavs. They got destroyed. Oh, we've got to get him out of there. Like
they didn't get destroyed the first 2 games. And Utah's a pretty good team, and you got to kind of figure it out. You have no idea what you're managing with the Game 7 series that they had last time with fatigue, right? If you don't think the easiest example is if you think it's easy to coach guys that can really, really play, you know, like, look, every team is constructed differently. Every team is constructed differently, right? This Clippers team, for example, is constructed around 2 stars. If it was so easy, why couldn't Doc Rivers win?
Doc Rivers, we know historically, has been a terrible postseason coach. He's the only coach in NBA history to blow 3 3-1 leads, okay? When you look at the Vegas odds, you know I do a ton of gambling stuff, Doug. The Clippers were the favorites last year. Okay, they failed. They now came into this season. The Lakers were favored in the West. The Nets were overall favorites. Anthony Davis goes out. It's like, okay, Clippers, the seas have parted for you. Win the damn West, and all they do is fall behind in series, Doug.
Okay, but they fell behind. Like, it's a 7-game series. They don't give any awards if you go up 2-0. They don't go, hey, oh, you're up 2-0? You know what? Let's just call it off, right? So it was 2-2. They lose the best or second best player in the league.
Yeah.
They go in and they beat the Utah Jazz, and you're still beating the drum against Ty Lue? Like, what?
I'm not. It's not against. Major praise on people. I just say it's too early for me to know if Ty Lue's a good coach. Is that okay?
Here's the issue. Here's the issue. Everything you say is result-oriented, right? Result-oriented. That if the ball goes in, you're a genius. If the ball doesn't go in, you're an idiot, right? That's basically your reaction, which is okay. That's the way in which you evaluate the validity of your takes or the validity of players.
I don't think that's totally fair.
It's absolutely fair. Okay? If the Clippers, win a series, well, then Ty Lue did great. If they don't win a series, well, then he's an idiot.
Because timeout. Luka
Doncic, because look, you're not taking any nuance into it.
There is nuance. There's tons of it.
No, there's not. Okay?
How is there not?
The Clippers failed last year. Like, dude, they're in the bubble. They had Lou Williams going out and getting hot wings when they're supposed to be on quarantine. They hadn't been together all year, and they fizzled apart. And the Lakers, who end up winning the championship, were just as close to the edge, but several things happened in their favor.
Well, no, they had leadership in the locker room in LeBron James. Doc Rivers was not a leader. Kawhi Leonard is not a leader. Paul George is not a leader. We know this. It's established history.
They did have leadership, but they also I'm talking the Lakers. They also, again, you're taking away from the fact that they had a matchup against the Rockets, who could not beat them. The Rockets had no chance of beating the Lakers last year. Additionally, when they were on the brink of fizzling apart, they got 2 games off because of the Kenosha protests, and it helped them kind of recharge their batteries. Then their families arrived, and that's a different makeup of a team than the Clippers. The Lakers didn't want to be in the bubble either. Okay, a lot of those teams didn't want to be in the bubble. A bunch of other teams lost in the bubble because they just weren't functioning correctly there. And then what happened was the Lakers end up getting to the conference finals, and there's no Clippers. They had a matchup they could win, and they got recharged by their families and by the opportunity to win a championship. Again, but you're taking it as it's an abject failure because of a franchise. Look, if you want to go back to last year, you could also point out that none of these put together fantasy teams win in year one. Mm. They just don't.
Well, okay. Hey, LeBron. I got LeBron a billionaire on my side. LeBron, Steve Ballmer, the billionaire.
Who cares? He doesn't know anything about basketball.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything. He was so embarrassed that his Clippers locker room fell apart that he fired the coach. Okay? That's how embarrassed he was at the Clippers. Now, on to Ty Lue. I just need to say this. Ty Lue's coaching career takes over for David Blatt, right? They fire David Blatt, LeBron, and a loaded team with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love. Win the championship.
Yep.
Okay. Then the next year they lose in the finals.
Came from behind. They were down 3-1.
They were down 3-1. Draymond suspended. Andrew Bogut gets hurt.
Right. They had some things.
You still
got
to come back from down 3-1. But you have the greatest player in NBA history on your team. The next year you lose in the finals. Second no harm to losing to Durant and Curry. Then you lose again when you have Jeff Green maybe as your second best player behind LeBron in the finals. No big deal. Right. Fired 6 games into the next year. I know they're tanking. Then he lands with Kawhi. So basically, your body of work for judging Ty Lue is, how did he do with LeBron? He won a championship. Then he lost in the finals. No harm done. Now, he's the head coach with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on a super-ish team. How are you? I just don't think we can accurately judge this guy, but at the same time, I'm not saying we need to send him to Orlando, see if he can get to the playoffs, then we'll judge if he's a good coach.
Jason McIntyre, Doug Gottlieb, and for Dan and the Danettes. Look, coaching in the NBA is not as much about, some of it's about finding matchups, which is that appears to be his greatest expertise, right? Is that he can, you give him a game or two, and he'll figure out how to put the puzzle together. And he's like, I don't want to use the directions. I'm going to figure this thing out. And eventually he does figure it out. And keeping guys together. Look, when they're down 2-0 to the Dallas Mavericks, and all those guys go in front of the press and say, not worried, Not at all. And then you look at Ty Lue every time he calls a timeout. Do you see any facial affect at all? You wouldn't know they're winning or they're losing. Nothing, okay? Does not change expressions. So whatever he has been able to teach those players on how to react during adverse situations, you find out about coaches, about players, about human relationships, right? Everything in life is all the same in that you find out about people during times of adversity. And during times of adversity, Ty Lue's a cool cucumber, yeah, and he keeps the team together. If that's not good coaching, no. If you don't think that's good coaching, then you probably shouldn't talk about sports.
I didn't say good coaching. I said that basically we don't know. But you can admit this. Ty Lue has been dealt pocket kings every damn time he's been a head coach in the NBA. True or false?
I don't know. You think it's easy to coach LeBron James?
You're not really doing much. It's LeBron. He's running the show. LeBron went to the finals 8 years in a row because he's the greatest player on the planet. Doug, come on.
He was on a stacked team in a bad conference.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it's still not easy. There's a reason he ran through coaches. He tried to get rid of Spoelstra. There's a reason he did get rid of David Black.
Yeah, because Spoelstra tried to tell him what to do. Do you think Ty's saying, LeBron, do this? Remember, the famous stuff, Kyrie Irving versus Ty Lue. Ty Lue is telling Kyrie, hey, you got to run the offense. Kyrie Irving basically dropped the basketball on the court and said, this is LeBron's team. You said that. You tell him to do it. I'm not doing it. And Kyrie Irving said, I'm demanding out. That's what happened. That was reported by multiple outlets. Like,
I don't know why you're moving the goalposts on this thing.
I don't need to. There's no goalposts moving.
You're pointing out reaffirming what I've said. Hold up. It is hard. If you think it's easy, you think it's easy. Right? Like, look, I don't know. Nobody's pointed this out. Okay, why did Ty Lue turn down the
Lakers? Hold up, Doug. Are you seeing the news?
Did you just
see who got traded in the NBA?
No, Kemba.
Kemba Walker just got traded to OKC. Holy cow. Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting Kemba has been dealt. Oh, they had to unload a pick in the draft. They got Al Horford. Oh, my gosh.
They got Al Horford and his bad contract back.
Moses Brown, former UCLA great.
And a
23-second round pick. Now, the story, not to go too off track here, is that Kemba was very unhappy that the Celtics tried to trade him this year. Danny Ainge, of course. And there was some issues there. And look at this. They
Kemba's
deal him in the middle of the playoffs.
He can't play anymore.
I feel terrible for Kemba because he was awesome when he was healthy.
And then
the knee acts up and now he's gone. Holy cow. So the Celtics are kind of blowing it up.
Hold on. Let me get back and we'll take a break. We'll take a break in a second. Jason, contain yourself. Jason, contain yourself. It's okay. It's only 6:18 here on the West Coast.
2 hours of change left, Doug.
Look, the point that you just made about coaching Kyrie Irving is all part of the coaching LeBron James. Like, you have to manage all of these egos. It ain't easy. And he's done a very good job. You haven't heard one peep of complaint like you did last year about Paul George and his lack of leadership, that people didn't take him seriously. You haven't heard anything like that. You didn't hear anything when they're down 2-0. And admit that once they're down 2-0 against the Mavericks and they tied it up, you're like, that series is over. And they found a way, even through adversity in Game 7, to win it. Same thing happened in Utah. The thing felt like it was over after Game 4, and then Kawhi gets hurt. So you can tell me that you don't know. Based upon all of the active evidence, you do know. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he turned down the Lakers, so he could have coached LeBron James, and he wanted a better deal, got a better deal, and has done as good a job as you can possibly do. So I don't know what the we don't know on Ty Lue.
Jury's still out.
The only jury I can tell you is he has so far been the most impressive coach in the playoffs.
Ooh,
period.
That's spicy.
Stop.
I would need to let that marinate, but there's a guy named Monty Williams who has pretty much wrecked shop with the Phoenix Suns, who I would definitely go that way.
You know what? That's fair. I love Monty, and his story is incredible. And him keeping them together with the Suns, it's a hard one because the Lakers were so injured, but obviously Monty's done an amazing job with the Suns. That would be absolutely fair for you to point that out.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
What up with you? Doug Gottlieb, Jason McIntyre, Dan Patrick Show. Happy Meat Friday to you here on Fox Sports Radio. If only there was something to talk about. Because right? We're still reacting to last night's games, getting ready for tonight's games. Then we have Rick Carlisle, 2 years left in his contract, like, I'm out. This 2 days after The Athletic has a piece that says the Mavericks are a dysfunctional mess, right? General manager gone, head coach gone. Mark Cuban calls the article BS. Crazy. Zion Williamson's family's unhappy. I think family translates into one person, but we'll get to that. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically with no limit to how much you could earn. How amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing because of all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of the places in the U.S. that take credit cards take Discover. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Jace, let's get into tonight, because tonight will be a referendum on the 76ers and Doc Rivers in his first year as head coach of the 76ers. You obviously are not a Doc Rivers fan.
I mean, that's a little harsh. I like to deal in facts and reality, Doug. And the reality is Doc Rivers has underachieved greatly as a head coach in the NBA. He got gifted a championship when Danny Ainge delivered him Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. Otherwise, it's been playoff failure after playoff failure. And as the number one seed this year in the East, the Sixers, everything had lined up for them to go to the NBA Finals. The process was going to finally come through, and they go ahead and choke away Game 5. I mean, Doug, I don't know that I've ever seen anything in the last decade that bad. I mean, this was, no joke, almost as bad as the Patriots being down 28-3 to the Falcons and then coming back and winning. I know that's a Super Bowl, and this is the Game 5.
They out-Atlanted an Atlanta team. I get it.
But, I mean, they were up 26 at home, and they lost. I mean, Doug, you know basketball, okay? You know coaching.
Really hard to lose that game.
The Atlanta Hawks had benched their starting, not their starting backcourt, but they benched Herter and Bogdanovich. The Hawks, for like a final 7 minutes, went with Lou Williams and Trae Young in the backcourt. Doug, I'm not even kidding. You and I could have mild success scoring on those two right now. That's how bad of a defensive backcourt that was. And the 76ers did nothing. Doug, this is an embarrassment. I don't know how Doc Rivers went to sleep that night, honestly.
Well, I'm sure he probably didn't sleep particularly well. It should be pointed out that Doc Rivers was terrible at the free throw line, right? Man, I can't believe it. Doc Rivers, who somehow like metamorphosized and shaped his body to look like Ben Simmons. And Doc Rivers also embodied Tobias Harris, who was terrible down the stretch. These are all kind of Doc Rivers. But yes, you're right. When you have previous playoff collapses, it does call into question, what are you doing over there, right? How are you not? Now, part of it is how this team is shaped, right? They go to that bench, and it's a lot like any time you have a surgical procedure. No matter how well it may go, every time you go under the knife, something bad can happen. And eventually you build up scar tissue. That bench let him down, and then the starters let him down.
Well, wait, Doug, hold on. You miss one thing. Tobias Harris is the highest paid player on the Sixers, $34 million.
Yep.
He didn't score a basket in the second half, okay?
No, you, I mean, Doug, look, gone, everybody
hold on,
wants
one
to...
more thing, one more thing. Yeah. You've gone camping with your kids. Let's just say you get a massive cut.
I've never gone camping with my kids.
Okay, you get a massive cut on your arm, and it is bleeding. You could easily bleed out when you're camping. You've got to apply a tourniquet. You've got to stop the bleeding!
Yes.
Doc Rivers did not once stop the bleeding in the fourth quarter. He did absolutely nothing. I joked on Straight Fire that, you know, Scooby-Doo, that great show, you know, at the end of Scooby-Doo, they would solve the mystery and they would pull a mask off the bad guy to reveal, you know, somebody that they knew.
And if it wasn't for those meddling kids, I would have gotten away with
it too. So I joked that when they pulled the mask off Doc Rivers at the end of Game 5, you would see Mike Budenholzer of the Bucks, because that's how bad and awful the offense was for the 76ers. They were running, I mean, they weren't running sets. I mean, Doug, you know basketball plays. You call them with your son. I didn't see one play called in like the fourth quarter other than, hey, Tobias, dribble around, try a fadeaway, do something. Joel, do something. I mean, that's not basketball, and Doc Rivers should be embarrassed.
Okay, I thought the Scooby-Doo analogy was good, But remember, you don't have to quote yourself. You can just say it, right? You can just say it. You don't. Let me quote myself and what I said, and just say it. It's because I hadn't heard the take, and it's a pretty damn good take. I will say that Doc pointed out that this is an issue with his team in a previous loss where he talked about them getting selfish, because this team does have a tendency to get selfish. And then what do you do with Ben Simmons? I mean, that it's really hard to hide guys that not only can't shoot but don't want to shoot, and then you can't make a free throw, and then everybody in the gym. Yeah. Here's how you'll know if he can coach, how they play tonight, and the energy by which they play. Because they were up 25 points for a reason. They're up 26 points for a reason, right? Because they did have some things figured out, and he did put them in position, and they did share the basketball, and it was working. So after that level of defeat, this is where real coaching takes place. Is all right, now what now? Because if they lay down like dogs tonight, because if you go back and remember the Nuggets series last year, right? Huge leads, fourth quarter, lost it, fall apart. They're up 3-1. All right, it's 3-2. Same thing happened in game 6. In game 7, it did look like the just stress of it had overcome them.
They did lead by double digits at halftime of the final 3 games. So the second half, Doc really choked.
Well, okay, but I mean, there's some sort of level of acceptance that the players make the plays. I do think that the coaches are responsible. Like, I always love that when, and you're guilty of this, but so are so many others, right? When his teams lose, it's Doc Rivers. When the teams wins, it's the players.
I think it's nuanced because it's how they lost. You're dominating that game for 3 quarters, and then in the fourth, you totally collapse. Like, that's really bad. Now, there is some similarities between this and what Kevin Durant did, right? You know, the Nets were basically outplayed in game 5 for 2.5 quarters, and then Durant took over. You know, basically the 76ers rolled them for 3 quarters and then collapsed. I do think the Sixers win tonight. For the gamblers out there, line opened at Sixers, favored in the Highlight Factory by 1.5. It's out to 3 now. So a lot of folks seem to think, listen, the 76ers are the better team.
Yes.
As long as Doc Rivers doesn't, you know, trip over his 2 left feet, they should prevail here on the road.
Okay. For me, I believe that's a sign of quality coaching. It's not just about talent, but it's about the ability to get guys back up off the deck. And we'll see if they can force a game 7.
Do you want to do fake Ben Simmons trades? Because we could do an hour on them. I mean, there's so many good options, Doug, for moving Ben Simmons. And you have to agree. If they lose, you got to figure Simmons gets traded. Remember, Daryl Morey tried to trade Ben Simmons for James Harden early this year. Sure. Of course, the Rockets would not deal with Morey because he had just landed in Philly. But at the same time, is Doc Rivers in trouble? Because we just saw Stan Van Gundy get fired after 9 months in New Orleans. Hold on. And I had Tom Haberstroh on my podcast, Straight Fire, today. And guess what? Daryl Morey did not hire Doc Rivers. They hired Doc Rivers, then Morey came aboard. So if Daryl Morey says, listen, hey, I got to get my guy in here, is Doc Rivers in trouble?
No.
Unequivocally no, or maybe not?
No, he's not in trouble his first year. He's not in trouble his first year, you know. Because look, they've already done the fire the GM, they fired the coach, and so the next one to fall would be one of the two star players. That's generally the way it works. Because if you're gonna fire Doc Rivers, who are you gonna hire? Rick Carlisle? Like, that's the only guy
Rick
out there
Carlisle,
who's won a championship.
It sounds like, you know, texting some people last night, it sounds like Rick Carlisle's probably gonna end up with the Pacers. But I
heard Stotts to the Pacers, but okay.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter. I don't think Rick Carlisle pulls the trigger and parachutes out of there with 2 years left in his deal unless he had another contract.
Real quick, I think Chauncey Billups, who has been potential for many, many jobs. We've seen Steve Kerr, a former player, and then an announcer go to the booth. Well, we saw Steve Nash go quickly to the sidelines, has had some success, I know, with the stack team. I think Chauncey Billups is the guy to watch. I think he can handpick his job, whether it's Celtics, whether it's New Orleans, and Dallas. But I would not be shocked if they looked at Chauncey Billups in Philly, if they boot Doc Rivers.
Wait, who? Chauncey Billups?
Chauncey Billups, yeah. These younger dudes, like Carlisle's 61.
I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, that's going to be the trend here in the NBA.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, Jamal Mosley, who, full disclosure, is a friend. He played for my dad in AU. Like, Jamal's been a grinder and didn't play in the league, but was a damn good player at Colorado. Like, the younger guys who have league cred, those are the ones who are going to get most of these jobs, mm-hmm. most of them. The difference becomes when you have it, it's all where you have a team, right? If you have a championship caliber team, boy, it's really hard to give a job to an unproven guy, because in order to win a championship in the NBA, a lot of times you have to have won a championship in the NBA, right? You have to have respect in the locker room at the highest level. To have respect in the locker room at the highest level, you have to have won at the highest level. It's okay, like a catch 22.
Well, and Chauncey
could
Nash.
Be the one. Yes.
How did he get it?
He got it out of relationship.
With
Sean
Durant.
Marks is his guy, and Sean Marks is him. Our ex teammates and close friends. And I'm sure that there's a good portion of it which is like, man, how are we going to get a guy who knows how to communicate with superstars mm-hmm. on their level? Steve Nash is kind of the one guy. Do I think Chauncey could potentially be that type of guy because he's played and he's been so respected? Yes. But do I think it becomes a turnstile in Philadelphia? Probably not. I mean, like, look, Philadelphia's biggest issue, okay? Everybody talks about Simmons shooting. Like, yeah, okay. Their biggest issue is their bench. The Sixers bench was outscored by the Hawks bench 39-13. Right? Your bench gets outscored by 26 points, right? And there you go. It's what they haven't been able to do to put around. So when these guys come out of the game, knowing Embiid's always going to have to come out, and of course, they inherited Ben Simmons, and Simmons is a hard one, right? He wants to be a point guard, but you got to put him in the dunker spot like you used to have to with Rondo with the Celtics. The problem is they don't have good enough players around like the Celtics did back in the day. I don't think it's a disaster yet. If they lose tonight, then it is, and heads will roll. But I don't think it's going to
okay.
be Doc.
How about this?
In year one.
Ben Simmons to Portland for CJ McCollum. And so, I don't know, whatever salary matches up, Nasir Little, maybe Zach Collins, whatever you want to do. Does that help put more shooting around Joel Embiid and it moves Ben Simmons? I don't know. I think you could probably try. If I'm getting Ben Simmons, whatever organization I am trying something radical. I'm making him Draymond Green, my center slash point guard. He's defending opposing centers and taking pressure off Dame.
Well, he can't defend opposing centers. He can guard 1 through 4.
Why not? Why can't he try? What great centers are there in the league that he can't guard?
Well, it all depends on the type of center, right? Like a small ball big, he could.
Yes.
Right? Like if it's a PJ Tucker, a Draymond Green, he could, and he does. If it's a roll rim guy, Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella. Those guys are hard to guard on screen roll action because it's just different, right? It's why you match up big to big,
right?
It's Jonas Valanciunas. It's like, oh, well, you just put Ben Simmons on. Like, no, Jonas Valanciunas would move Ben Simmons.
He's like an exception, but I'm just
Team has one. Right, that's actually not every team has.
Not every team has a Jonas. I mean, come on, that guy put
no. They either have
numbers.
they either have a guy who rolls to the rim to finish, or the guy that can maybe only plays. You know, Zubac only plays.
Yeah, I'm not worried about
minutes.
Zubac. Yeah, but
here's where you're thinking very linearly. You're thinking just bold statement, Jason McIntyre-y. Where the thing is, it's going back to your point about Rudy Gobert. Right, you can make Rudy Gobert chase you on the defensive end, as long as he doesn't hurt you at his offensive
end. Can he hurt you?
I think if they ran more pick and roll, yeah, like you can throw it to the rim and he can finish. But that's the flaw to Rudy Gobert is he can't score at the block at
I'm
all.
I'm giving that all day. I'll give up twos all day for threes.
Well, the other question is, why would Portland want Ben Simmons?
Well, here's my thing. If you're Portland, you're not going to be able to get premier free agents. That's just the reality. They're not going there, okay?
Correct.
Number two. You have basically gotten as far as you can, conference finals, right? I think you need to do something radical, try something different. The biggest returns in life usually happen when you try something contrarian. Do something that really nobody else has done or nobody's willing to try. you can't just keep doing things in Portland. Let's trot out the good backcourt. Let's be thin at small forward, and we've got some bigs and Nurkic and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just not going to get you over the hump. I would sooner try something radically different.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, trade Dame and start over. Because, you know, you can't just trot out this Portland team again and expect to be a top four seed and maybe go to the finals. I would try something radical.
Those are the best points you've made. And look, for Damian Lillard, whoever they bring in, like, the truth of Damian Lillard is he's not really a passing point, mm-hmm. right? He's not really a point. He's a scorer, and he's not really a particularly good defender. He's not a terrible defender, but he's not a great defender at all. And so both of these things Ben Simmons would help with.
Yeah.
He's an outstanding passer.
How about this?
He's a versatile defender. The question is going to be, obviously, what do you do with him on offense, right? Obviously, if you play him as a, you know, he's like a shrink four, shrink five, instead of a stretch four, yeah. stretch five. And I don't know if his personality and style appeals to Damian Lillard, who will probably have some sort of say in what they do because yeah. they want to acquiesce to his desires in order to always keep him on board with what Portland's doing.
How about this one? Ben Simmons to Charlotte in exchange for like Terry Rozier, Malik Monk, and whatever spare parts equal the salaries. And the thought process here is, man, you get Ben Simmons and LaMelo Ball. That is
What would be the appeal to the 76ers?
Well, you get shooting. You get a guy like Malik Monk who can make threes. I think Terry Rozier was like 38% from deep. Monk, in limited capacity, was very good this year. I just think if you're Philly, all you want is shooting. You got Tobias Harris. You got Seth Curry. You need a couple more shooters. I don't think Maxey's there yet.
They can't guard anybody. They're built around defense. They're one of the
and where has it gotten them? And where has it gotten them?
Well, it did give them a 26 point lead in the second round of the playoffs, right?
It's
so
fair.
I mean, again,
yeah.
you're completely changing. And look, then there's the big elephant in the room, which is do you actually trust Joel Embiid's going to stay healthy?
I don't. But
okay,
Ben
so
Simmons
now you've
has
gone
been so bad, Ben Doug, that I have to concede. I have been criminally wrong about Ben Simmons. I have tooted that Ben Simmons has been the guy. I would trade Embiid. I would build around Ben Simmons. And this postseason, I cannot defend it anymore. I mean, I'm embarrassed that I have rode this train so far. I mean, he is criminally bad.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who knows a lot more about the inner workings of this is Ryan Hollins, 10-year NBA vet. And, of course, he's got the Opinionated 7-Footers podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at the Ryan Hollins. Ryan, let's start in NOLA. If you're David Griffin, how do you try and make it work with Zion?
Well, you got to bring him in somewhat. I know he's young in this hiring process. You know, he's got to feel comfortable in the next head coach that you bring in. Yeah, it's got to be someone who can relate to him, who can speak to him, but also isn't going to just give him his way and let this be the Zion show. I played in situations where I knew the star player had more control than the head coach, and it was ugly. It was ugly. We weren't a good team. It didn't work out. I'm not going to name no names. I'm going to just leave that out there for you guys. It didn't work out. And I've been in situations where the head coach had respect and a star player knew how to do what he needed to do. But Zion Williamson has to learn how to be a superstar. He got superstar-like talent. I think he's over-exceeded at least my expectations and many of our expectations. But he's still on the cusp of like, hey, kind of what are you in this league? And to me, it's no gosh darn excuse anywhere on anybody's planet that they couldn't get the 10th seed or better in the Western Conference with two All-Stars on the same team. We don't need to go down that road. But ultimately, he needs a coach who can get him in line. And ultimately, I love the idea of a former player or someone who can talk that talk. because you got to be able to relate to your players. And you got one job as a head coach in the NBA, relate to your players.
I don't know, Ryan. It sounds like you're pinning some of his struggles on Zion. I mean, he was the best post scorer in the NBA this year. He's basically shattered all records for teenager.
Why couldn't they win?
Because the roster stinks.
Why couldn't they win?
David Griffin put together a garbage roster. Garbage is harsh. These guys are professional athletes.
Brandon Ingram is garbage.
Brandon Ingram is a good scorer. That's what Brandon Ingram is. He's a good scorer. He's a good number three. They paid him like he's the number one or two.
He's a very good scorer.
Very good scorer.
He's not mini Durant, but he's not
far
behind. Their roster, they don't play any defense.
All-stars can't get you the 10th spot? Stop it. Don't do that. Don't do that.
So none of this falls on the shoulders of Van Gundy and Griffin. You're putting it all on Zion?
No, some of it is, but what Ryan's saying is like, look, some of what Stan Van Gundy wanted them to do is still going to be a problem no matter who's the coach. Stan Van Gundy, he wanted to play defense. They don't play any defense.
Nobody in the NBA plays defense. This
is
the best offensive season in the history of the sport.
If Russell Westbrook alone can get you to the playoffs, maybe he can.
Wait, what? Russell Westbrook alone?
Russell Westbrook alone.
Bradley Beal was an all-NBA player, Ryan. Stop. He was an all-NBA player this year.
It was the East,
Westbrook didn't do that in the West. In OKC, once Kevin Durant left. Don't do that with me. Let's not talk. Russell Westbrook couldn't do that alone.
They had Victor Oladipo.
Victor Oladipo was on.
And it was a championship caliber team that you took him out and what do we do? What do we do? Well, I don't know how we veered off course. Okay, so I agree with you on talk. Like, I think that's the trend that you're seeing in the NBA, right? Guys that are Ty Lue, guys that are Steve Nash, guys that are in their 40s, played, or Jamal Mosley, relatable. That guys, the old NBA coach thing is kind of tired, kind of going away. Who's the guy in New Orleans? Is it Fred Vinson? Is that who they elevate?
I don't know about that. Chauncey Billups.
I think you got to go after. You know, obviously it's looking like Jason Kidd is off the market. Maybe the right price may sway him. A Chauncey Billups. There's a number of guys you got to, you know, Fizdale, maybe it doesn't have to be a former big time pro, you know, maybe an assistant, a relatable assistant there. So I'm not clear. I mean, shoot, Sam Cassell, you know, I don't know why people haven't thrown money at Sam Cassell yet. We saw how excellent he was with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and John Wall, you know, outside of the injuries, hadn't really played as well at basketball as since, you know, he was with Sam Cassell kind of tutoring and mentoring him. I'm seeing his growth. So you got to have someone that develops. But it's got, you know, you got to talk the talk. Doug, you're a former player. You know what the talk is. There's a different talk in the locker room. You got to be able to talk the talk. You know, Ty Lue, when Ty Lue was an assistant, when I was in Boston and L.A., he was able to get in KG's behind just because he talked the talk. He understood it. You know, he knew buttons to push. You know, I heard him scream at Blake Griffin and Chris Paul when they weren't doing their jobs. You know, you got to have someone who can relate. And there's levels to this. And there's a different type of unwritten rule in the locker room that an assistant or a former player may have and understand that the head coach may not, you know. And Zion Williamson in particular, he needs someone who can push those right buttons. Well, Luka Doncic clearly needed someone who can push the right buttons. I mean, he played well, but clearly he wasn't on the same page with Rick Carlisle, a coach that I played for.
Ryan, let me ask you. I'm with you on the former player, but what happened? What about Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta? Lloyd Pierce and Trae Young seemed to get along last year, and then they had the off-season summer of love out here. All these great stories about how the Hawks were bonding, and then, you know, everybody's hurt, and Lloyd Pierce gets fired. Apparently, Trae Young didn't like him, wanted a new guy, and now we got kind of an old-school guy, Nate McMillan. Is he old-school enough? I mean, he played in the 80s.
See, here's the thing. Lloyd may have been, for one, Lloyd may have been too young. And for two, Trae Young at that stage in his career may have had a little bit of too much freedom.
Yes, yes.
What do I mean by that? I haven't been there in that locker room. I haven't spoken to people, but from the outset and looking at things that I've heard, Trae Young was just all powerful without having all the wins and was kind of running amok and saying what he wanted to. And I'm sure when Nate McMillan came into that locker room, he brought respect to those guys. Those guys learned how to be teammates. They learned how to grow. So Trae was too young to have the young coach.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because respect is a huge factor. You know, like when LeBron looked at Ty Lue, he could be like, dog, I played with MJ. I was in there with MJ. I was in there with Kobe. I was in there with Shaq. So not only do I know how to talk to you, I'm a world champion. I got something that you want to have. You know what I'm saying? Or I've seen guys go places where you want to go. So you do have to carry a strong level of respect. And I just think Nate McMillan was a good mix. You didn't need a young guy or coach in that. And Lloyd is a great coach.
No, listen. And a lot of it's about, it's not necessarily about whether or not a guy can do it or can't do it, but the timing and the fit and the, like,
respect.
You know, there's where do you get a player? What is, and the Trae Young thing, as you pointed out, is hard, right? Came in the league and he plays a way in which he's going to dominate the ball. He'll take that one extra dribble so he makes sure he gets an assist. He wasn't particularly good defensively. You got to hold him accountable, and yet you still need him to grow in order to be. It's a hard one. It's really hard. All right, let's get to really quickly. How much do you hold Doc Rivers accountable for what happened two nights ago?
Here's the math. Doc Rivers has been a part of some of the largest comebacks in NBA history, and he's got to take accountability for that as a coach. But for me, and I've screamed from the mountaintops from day one, Doug, I've been assassinated a lot more than you via social media and internet, all that. I said the problems with Ben Simmons were just glaring, and Philadelphia wouldn't have true success until he found a jump shot or just something efficient in fourth quarters. And in the second half of that game, for Ben Simmons to go completely ineffective is inexcusable. I mean, hot damn it, get the ball on the post. You know, missing free throws at the guard spot is inexcusable. So for only Joel Embiid to have the ball in his hands and Curry to score in the second half of that game, it's just not going to work. If you were coaching against Doc Rivers and you knew damn well at some point Nate McMillan knew, who are y'all going to down the stretch? You can't post up down the stretch. You're running Joel Embiid off a stagger screen. Like, it's just not going to work. So once Jimmy Butler left, Philly's chances went down a tube.
Oh.
And it looked like Nate McMillan figured it out. Said, whoa, who are they going to, guys? They don't have anybody to go to.
Oh.
Who's their close? Hold on. You name a coach. Jason, don't do that. Name me the closer in Philly.
Listen, Ryan. This was the one team in the East. Best record. They steamrolled the Hawks for three quarters, and it was simply a fourth quarter collapse because of Doc Rivers. Don't pin this all on Ben Simmons because he hasn't taken a shot in the fourth quarter of the last two games.
Tobias Harris, he's
making the most money on that damn roster.
Jason, you couldn't lock him. You could lock him in the gym. He couldn't score 10 a game, right?
He's one of the youngest all-stars in NBA history. One of the best defenders in the league.
Hold on. So is Doc's fault that he can't make a free throw?
No, it's Doc's fault that he couldn't stop the bleeding.
He can't make a free throw.
It's okay. Let's get to. We're not going to convince Jason.
Let me ask Jason.
This is like convincing Donald Trump that the election
the
election.
That's a lie. That's not even
he
close.
He lost the election. Mr. President, you lost. We checked it all out and you lost. No.
33% on Ben Simmons. You could go 33% on Tobias Harris and you go 34% on Doc. Let me ask this. Hold on. Is Luka Doncic's job in Dallas, is that a good coaching job given what we know about Mark Cuban, about the shadow GM Harlebob, and Luka Doncic being a superstar? Is that a good job in Dallas? And think this over before you answer. Oh, great. They got the best player in the league.
Man, you guys know I don't cuss, but you almost made me cuss, Jason McIntyre, and I don't cuss. Are you kidding me? That is an amazing job. You want to know why? Because Mark Cuban is willing to do anything to win. When Steve Ballmer came into the Clippers, okay, maybe we can say, well, Kawhi, you didn't do this, or Doc, but Steve Ballmer's like, oh, here, boom, here are the keys. What do y'all need? Mark Cuban is the same way, saying, what do you need to win? What do I need to put around you? Luka, I got my guy. Sorry, Luka, you're bigger than Donnie Nelson. You're bigger than Rick Carlisle. Rick, thank you for your services, but no thank you. Luka Doncic, I can win a championship with you. And if you step in as a head coach, you got to come in. The one thing I will say, you got to have respect. When I was there the coach prior was Avery Johnson. Now, the problem is when Avery got promoted, Avery was getting micromanaged.
Right.
So if you are a coach, you got to have the respect there where Cuban ain't sending you cards and say, put this guy in the game or run this or
change that. That's what the shadow GM is doing. And by the way, Mark Cuban will do anything to win, but he hasn't won a playoff series in a decade. So, yeah, you're right, Ryan.
He has a chip. Don't do that. He has a championship.
He does,
yeah. Do that, Jason.
11 years ago or what, 10 years ago.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
That's one more than all these other dudes.
Yeah, Doc Rivers has a chip, too.
Real quick here.
Ryan, to the studio, man.
Ryan. Can the Nets win as currently comprised against the Bucks, or will the Nets win as currently comprised against the Bucks?
They will. James Harden is getting better and better. He actually kind of looked like himself for a
Agreed.
Couple possessions, if not a yep. quarter, last night. If I had to put my money on Middleton and Giannis or Kevin Durant by himself, I'm going with Kevin Durant. I thought the chess match behind the scenes was excellent from Bud, because Bud, if you watch on film, and I want to point this out, you know, the basketball nerd in me is jumping out. Kevin Durant arguably has the most prolific fadeaway jumper in NBA history. Sorry, Michael Jordan. And what they started to do is they overplayed his fadeaway and ran a double team from the baseline. That's the defense I've
double.
Never seen. Yeah.
It is? So when, you've never seen the baseline the double?
No. It was for the jumper, though, for the fadeaway.
Oh, yeah.
So
okay.
when KD went to his move, the defender just jumped and sold out, and then the second guy came late. Normally that double team, you force a guy to drive and you double team the drive. I've never seen a double team on the fadeaway, but it was an intriguing way that Bud played it. Giannis didn't take a three-pointer. The hardest thing that Kevin Garnett told me in my career during our playoff run was that the hardest thing you ever do is eliminate a team. I don't care how good or bad they are. It's hard to eliminate a team. Hardest thing you're ever going to do in your life is eliminate a team at the playoffs, and the Bucks showed us that last night. But in a game 7 at the crib, I've got my money on easy money sniper, fellas.
That's Ryan Hollins, 10-year NBA vet. Check out the Opinionated 7-Footers podcast. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Entire, you son Nelson. I'm on my way, man. I'll be there in 15 minutes, bro.
All right, good. You can answer this question.